Welcome everyone as we close out another hell week in 2020. And you know what? Why not? Let's have it be Friday the 13th. But anyway, despite how bad things have been, and there is a little bit of bad news in this, we do have some good news, and that good news is that we've got Brett Ehrlich. How's it going, Brett?
Oh, it's so good, John. It's just a good day to be around. You know, it's a good day to be on. Apparently, according to my phone that just started vibrating, I'm supposed to be on damage report right now, so that's good.
Yeah, you just reminded me to turn off my Bluetooth so that my earbuds don't get my next phone call. Anyway, no, it is good to have you here. We're gonna have a little bit of fun. We got garbage people coming up. Nobody knows this because it was before the show, but we've been talking a little bit about SNL. That was fun. A little bit of comedy for you.
Yep. Anyway, and the fun continues this evening on the Young Turks Network. After main show, we have a happy half hour with the viral internet star Kylie Brakeman, who you should go to Dead Eyed Brakeman on Twitter and watch her videos where she like does those frantic, well edited videos of her like being a Trump bot.
Oh, you know, I did not know that person's name, but I've definitely watched some of their videos.
Yeah, she's on. She's great. She's delightful. And then later tonight, we have Common Room with myself, Skip, Bart, and Edwin. So it will be the crew takes to the air, and we all take what's ours.
Oh my God, there is a chance that Edwin will laugh, and you'll see it. Like you've heard it in the background for years, like the call of a poltergeist, but now you will see it. That's exciting news. I'm very glad to hear that.
We should do a segment called Coltergeist. It's Ann Coulter.
I don't know.
She doesn't make
her. That's funny, but I don't want to talk about her.
The reason I said that, John, full disclosure, is I was picturing Laura Ingraham because I still can't tell them apart. And I was like, oh, it could happen every night. No, that's a completely different same person.
Yeah, throw a little bit of Kellyanne Conway in there and Kate McKinnon, and I don't know exactly where one stops. And anyway, okay, so there is a lot that we're gonna be talking about today, including you're gonna want to stick around to the end where we have our garbage people of the week. That's always fun. We also have a little bit of fun along the way. But for those of you who are already watching, feel free to hit the like button, share the stream, and continue commenting and super chatting, sending us tweets, and all of that. And we'll be responding as we go. With all of that said, there's a lot to get to. So Brett, what do you say? Why don't we launch into this thing?
Let's do.
Throughout this week, we've been talking about the possibility that Donald Trump might be on the precipice of instituting some pardons. It's a sort of tradition, you know, when a president's about to leave, they pardon a bunch of people. And it can go in a few different ways. It can be mildly corrupt or it can be really corrupt. And so we've been waiting to find out this president, which way he's gonna go. And we do have a little bit of reason to think that it's gonna be pretty widespread. In the past, remember, you might have forgotten about some of these. I did. In the past, he's pardoned people like Joe Arpaio, Dinesh D'Souza, Michael Milken. These are people who he knows from being on Fox News or writing books about him, and they like him, so he gives them pardons regardless of what their crimes are. That's fun. In the future, though, it might be people with more close ties to him, as you'll see with this appearance by Jamie Gangel on CNN.
I think one of the things we need to do is, you know, he is still in fight mode. So I don't know whether he has focused on presidential pardons yet. But what we do know is that if you just look at his Twitter feed for the last couple of years, there are people around him who he may very well pardon. Just looking at some of the people who were targeted in the Mueller investigation: Michael Flynn, George Papadopoulos, Paul Manafort, Alan Weisselberg, who's the accountant, Rudy Giuliani, Roger Stone, and also a name that's been mentioned a lot is Jared Kushner's father, Charlie Kushner. But as you said, Pamela, the real question is, will he in the end take a serious look at pardoning himself? There are a couple of things to keep in mind. He can only do that theoretically. It's never been tested for federal crimes, not for state crimes. But I want to read to you what a former administration official told CNN, that Trump has been asking about pardons since 2017. And here's a quote. Once he learned about it, he was obsessed with the power of pardons and used to ask about it all the time. He loved the notion of having power and doing favors.
I think probably less focused on the doing favors than using it to get favors, but sure, yes, that whole thing was very sad. But Brett, so we have other people he might pardon, as well as him. He's apparently concerned about existing investigations that could be waiting for him in New York, but the potential for new federal probes as well. I personally think that those are far less likely, but there are investigations that are already going on, some of which have advanced a little bit, some of the sex assault cases in just the last week or so. So what do you think about this? How likely do you rate him pardoning his close associates and goons and even perhaps himself and his family?
The ability to pardon yourself feels real weird, especially given the Constitution is set up with checks and balances on the government. And one of the three branches of our government is the executive branch, headed up by the president. You would think there would be some kind of check against that. Also, wouldn't you have to be convicted before you pardon yourself? It's not like asking for Grey Poupon, where you say pardon me first and then you do it. Like you should be only be able to pardon things that you've already been convicted of. Otherwise, why wouldn't you say like, you know, it like blanket pardon and then just go start killing people? Like that doesn't seem, yeah. I think the pardon in general is insane to me, but I understand ways it's been used before, because I think presidents and parts of the executive branch do the job of essentially setting priorities for the Justice Department. For example, it is still federally illegal to do marijuana stuff, but some, you know, Obama essentially said, I'm not going to prioritize that very much right now, so we're not going to pursue a lot of that prosecution and litigation. But in this sense, like, you can't just say, I think I'm going to pardon myself. Like, he absolutely will pardon his close associates. Pretty much every president has, and we just go like, good to be the king. But in this situation,
it does.
Pardoning yourself is insane, but the last like very troubling thing is when the reporter said he's been obsessed about it since he found out about it in 2017. Like someone who is that in charge of America, theoretically, to just be finding out things about America that most everyone else knows.
Yeah, no, like we're gonna find out that in like March 2019, he was quoted as saying, wait, you're telling me there's a nuke in that briefcase? Like he has no idea about any of this.
I thought it
stuff.
Was a football.
Exactly. I really did. I think they might be trying to convince him it's a literal football to make it less likely that he'll want to touch it because of the implications of exercise. So look, we're gonna have a little bit on the potential legality of it in a second. It does seem wrong. I sort of get it, but it feels like the most king thing in our system. It's like that's one bit of, you're an emperor basically for this one thing. Everything else, supposedly, there's limitations. Also, there might be one sort of baked in limitation to Donald Trump. Former aides to Trump are split on whether Trump would consider giving himself a pardon. Some see it as a near certainty, saying of course he will, while others believe it's unlikely because doing so would imply that he's guilty of something. Look, I get it that those are people that supposedly know him, and it's not like there isn't sort of some sense to that. But I feel like he could message his way around that. Yeah, he doesn't want to look like a loser, but he also doesn't want to go to jail. And I feel like if those two things are being weighed, I think I know where he's going to come out on that.
Yeah, I still am having trouble with the idea of him pardoning himself, just in general, implying he's guilty of something. Wouldn't you have to be found guilty of it? And then also, aren't there—
apparently not.
In various cases I've seen written that there are— he can't pardon people of a state crime, only a federal crime.
True.
So various outstanding investigations into like state tax fraud could incriminate him on a state level that's outside his reach, and very well within the reach of the, you know, the Cuomo bros.
Yeah. So what you would more likely see is pardons of all of his associates in the White House, and just him writing an executive order that's like two sentences of, you can't get me for any of that Mueller stuff if you keep investigating it. And then everyone will pretend that that's not him admitting that he obstructed justice as well as other things. obviously Donald Trump is apparently obsessed with the idea of pardons, but will he pardon himself? Could he pardon himself? Is it actually legal? It turns out it depends on who you talk to. If you talk to him, you'll be shocked to find out that he thinks it is. He tweeted way back in 2018, you know, like 3 months after he found out about presidential pardons.
As has been stated by numerous legal scholars, I have the absolute right to pardon myself. But why would I do that when I have done nothing wrong? In the meantime, the never-ending witch hunt led by 13 very capital angry and capital conflicted Democrats and others continues into the midterms.
So why would you tweet that if you've done nothing wrong? That's really weird. Like that is an admission, I think. And we've all sort of glossed over it, but he's been committed to the idea for several years now that if he wanted to, he could pardon himself. And in the theory, at least, you can pardon people not just for things they've already been investigated for or convicted of, but theoretically, preemptively, you can actually do that. The more interesting question is, could he do it himself? And we're gonna get to that. This is just a really funny quote I just gotta give you. One former official said that Trump was so fascinated by his pardon powers that senior level officials would sometimes bring up their research on the matter just to get Trump off another subject they wanted to steer away from.
Oh my God.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard. That like they know, like all that is I don't have my keys, but that's all it is. It's just dangling keys for a dog. That's what that is.
I can't. I'm so glad it's theoretically so close to over that this is just gonna go away. Okay, so I want to go back to that tweet. That tweet, I disagree that it's necessarily at everything he does is an admission that he has done something wrong. It's very obvious. But I think that the way to justify this tweet is to say, like, I didn't do anything wrong. But even if your witch hunt renders me convicted, it's not gonna work anyway because I have more power. So sorry. And that resonates with his base, whatever. But it is absolutely true and everyone knows it. And even the people that pretend they don't notice it understands that Trump, if you just tell him how powerful he is, then that's the end of the discussion. He's happy again. And that's tracking with all the reporting we're seeing about his utter loss in the election is that people are trying to keep him from realizing that. And it seems like they've done a pretty good job. And there have been reports that if you say Biden, you get fired and he freaks out. So they just don't say it.
Yeah. Now, as to the legality, which I think is substantive, it's not the most fun part of this, but it's the most important part. I'm gonna jump ahead just a little bit, Brandon. The Justice Department looked at the question in the Nixon era and concluded it wasn't within the president's power to pardon himself. Quote, under the fundamental rule that no one may be a judge in his own case, the president cannot pardon himself. The Office of Legal Counsel wrote back in August 1974. And there's been some stuff out of the Supreme Court recently that theoretically, having to do with some of the challenges he's already faced, indicates that they might agree with that. But I think it's an indication of that we are moving into uncharted really waters, at least by the ultimate judge, which would be the Supreme Court wing on this, which they have not through the history of the United States. That I've had guests on that have said, no, he totally can just say, I'm free and clear of anything coming from the federal government. And I had David K. Johnson on yesterday who was like, no, you obviously can't do that. It's settled. It's settled in the Justice Department as of 50 years ago, and maybe the Supreme Court wouldn't allow it because that does seem insane. But we have an insane Supreme Court, and so I don't know, maybe we'll end up finding out. The first step would be him pardoning himself, and that would happen sometime in the next 60 days or so.
But there is an extra little wrinkle to the process itself, John, and that is Trump using litigation as a way to buy time until he dies. And that's what's happened. And if you look at all his lawsuits surrounding voter impropriety and fraud, like he is right at that line because he has no actual case. So there is no actual case that will go into litigation. He needs to find a case that won't be dismissed. If you look at all the analyses of what he's putting before courts, he is on that line where most of it is so ridiculous, it's been dismissed. And his solution isn't to have it accepted and he knows it won't go through and be found in his favor in courts. He just needs to get in that litigation and he'll stay there. And he has a never ending supply of funds to pay for his legal support because he is taking the first $8,000 of every donation to his PAC and lining his own pockets. That's what's happening. That is the machine. That's how he has functioned forever. That's what we're experiencing here. That's what we'll experience in pardons. That's what we're experiencing in the electoral process. And that's what everyone who's ever done, you know, been contracted by him to build a building or give him a loan. That's what they've all experienced. His way of tying things up in court to buy himself time and then using grift to fund everything from legal fees to his extravagant lifestyle.
Yeah. All the incentives are set up for him to do the worst things that benefit himself.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today. And get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Pretty much every day we see a couple of the voter fraud related conspiracy theories get knocked down, but they've got an endless well of them. So now we've got a new one to talk about. And it has to do with Dominion election software, with people like Donald Trump tweeting, in all caps, mind you,
"Report Dominion deleted 2.7 million Trump votes nationwide. Data analysis finds 221,000 Pennsylvania votes switched from President Trump to Biden. 941,000 Trump votes deleted. States using Dominion voting systems switched 435,000 votes from Trump to Biden."
And this is coming to you via OANN. And shockingly, it turns out all of that is wrong. It's not even internally consistent. What happened with the votes? Because every one of those numbers has a lot of overlap with the other numbers, but the numbers are all very different. I don't know what they're claiming, but basically big numbers, Trump wins. That's all that is. And you know, he was thanking Sean Hannity for the takedown of the horrible, inaccurate, and anything but secure Dominion voting system where tens of thousands of votes were stolen. But wait, I thought it was 435,000 votes. Those tweets are on the same day. They have no idea what their conspiracy theory even is, but they know it's something, something Dominion. And Dominion sounds kind of scary. So you just say it, and I guarantee there are 20 million Americans who think Dominion stole the election. They don't know what it is or what happened, but they know that that happened at the very least.
This old Dominion state. It's like that's Pennsylvania's the old Dominion state.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's why.
And it's confusing, man, because Virginia. So he's tweeting about Dominion, but he also like he has to have his cake but eat it in an illogical way. So he also tweeted this morning, "For years the Dems have been preaching how unsafe and rigged our elections have been. Now they are saying what a wonderful job the Trump administration did in making 2020 the most secure election ever. Actually, this is true, except for what the Democrats did. Rigged election." So dude, you've been telling us millions of votes were deleted and switched, but you also want credit for the most secure election ever, but it was also rigged and stolen from you.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't make sense. But what do we expect out of this guy? It is very obvious. Actually, what he's doing is in line with what he's done since the start of all this voting. It's to say, the things that are good for me are true. The things that are bad for me are fraud and lies and fake. Yeah. And that's it. I will read you a quote from an analyst who said, "I looked into it. With that Dominion software, 5 counties in Michigan and Georgia had problems. And the Dominion software was used in 2 of the counties. And in every instance, largely it was human error, a problem. But the software did not affect the vote counts. You know who said that? Steve Doocy on Fox and Friends. So Fox and Friends is like, listen, it did not affect the vote count. And I think this is what everyone should be focused on right now, the dominant electoral strategy. If you look at the left has this divide between, and there's like three different versions of it. The more you like zoom into what the left is, the far, you know, the progressive side is doing. But there is a rift between establishment Dems and progressives. That's what everyone wants you to focus on, and that's what everyone wants you to talk about. On the right, there isn't. They're on the right, as far as everyone knows, the senators are in lockstep with Trump and the people in the House of Representatives. And the only people who are defecting from that were Democrats the whole time. All those Ben Sasses who are angling to bring back the oppressive establishment. But everyone else, even Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, they're all smart enough to realize that you should embrace your base.
Yeah,
but what's happening right now, the major liability there is Trump's relationship with Fox News. And everyone needs to point out every time that Fox News goes against Trump, because you have to create that wedge. Because what's Trump gonna do? He's gonna go start his own news network. And everyone should encourage that to happen. Because right now you have the left-leaning folks, you just have, everyone thinks it's CNN and MSNBC and it's all this like weird area where everybody's fighting with each other. On the right, they should be fighting with each other. Why? Because if you're a MAGA person, every senator kept their job. More establishment House of Representatives candidates used the MAGA crew to get a securer place in government. And what are they trying to do right now? Those senators are in a really weird place where if they acknowledge that Trump lost, now they're embracing reality, but they also are going against MAGA. Good.
Yeah.
Everyone should be messaging for them to embrace reality because it's reality. And then once they do that, go tell MAGA, listen, everybody abandoned your boy. That's how you have to dissolve that weird coalition between MAGA and everyone else. And this is one little area where we have the opportunity to do it. Doocy just turned on you. Go rebrand OANN, the Tanned Ass News Network.
Okay. You know, I have a little bit of breaking Twitter news that goes to what you're saying. I'm gonna turn to that in a second. But as you started to talk about what actually happened with Dominion, I feared that our producer, who did a great job of researching and creating graphics to demonstrate that point, are worried that it wasn't gonna be used. So I'm gonna use a little bit of it just so that their time wasn't wasted. But anyway, statement emailed to reporters by the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, which, as you'll see when I read the graphic, is probably gonna be shut down in like a day, said there is no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. The November 3rd election was the most secure in American history. Dominion Voting Systems, which does admittedly sound scary, said in a statement that it denies claims about any vote switching or alleged software issues with our voting systems. It just isn't there. There's human error. And there's, by the way, human error in counties that used Dominion and counties that didn't use Dominion. And what didn't happen is that tens of thousands of votes were switched, or the 150,000 votes that you would need in Michigan. That just doesn't actually exist. It didn't happen. And so you will hear a lot about Dominion for the next 2 days or so, until Trump actually has to go to court over Dominion. And his lawyers, who don't want to lose their license, are gonna have to say, we actually have no evidence that any votes were switched. And then it'll go away and it'll be replaced by something else. How many different theories have we been through in the last 9 days or so? Every day there's a new one. They're gonna lose interest in this almost immediately.
Well, there's Sharpiegate that went away. And yesterday it was reported that one of the lawyers in that case used as a witness his business partner.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah. Oh my God, where'd you find that sworn friend of yours? And now two separate major law firms have abandoned Trump. They're like, this guy's too toxic even for us. And we're lawyers.
Exactly. Brett was just talking about how Steve Doocy has turned on Donald Trump. It's Fox versus Trump. We've got an update on that. Someone who is apparently very close with Trump and has insider information about what Trump is doing and more importantly, what he will do. So this is a tweet that was sent out by Geraldo Rivera, who says, just had heartfelt phone call with friend real Donald Trump, who said he's a realist who will do the right thing. I love that he put that in quotation marks. But he wants to see what states do in terms of certification. He sounded committed to fighting for every vote, and if he loses, talking more about all that he's accomplished, which definitely sounds like Donald Trump. Yeah, he'll do the right thing. He's a realist, not deluded at all. But so Geraldo apparently just got off the phone this morning with Trump, and Trump is saying that inevitably he is going to concede. He just wants to see what happens. I don't know, Brett. What do you think about that? Is there any chance that that's true? And is Trump talking with Geraldo on the phone?
Yeah. That's the short answer. Yes, he's talking with Geraldo on the phone. It's exactly who I imagine. Everyone he talks to needs to be, as when you close your eyes and think about it, as ridiculous as Geraldo having a conversation. Go ahead, caller. I don't know if people watch Geraldo, he's talking to Geraldo, and that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
But what's the timeline? So I saw that the timeline was he got off the phone with Geraldo and then went and did the tweet that you read earlier.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is that then what Geraldo wants us to believe is that Trump is doing that, sure, but he is actually a realist. That is sort of performative or a Hail Mary, but he's not actually intending to barricade the White House or whatever.
No, that's
by the way, really, really fast, because there's two issues with that at least. One, if that's actually what Trump is doing, it's awful. Also, if that's actually what Trump is doing, wouldn't Trump be pissed at Geraldo for revealing that on Twitter immediately after getting off the phone with him?
Yes, but theoretically, if you're in the media, that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, that's what Woodward did. Woodward had a heart to heart with Trump, which Trump thought was going to be used in a certain context because of Trump's hubris, and it was used a completely other way. And did Trump, after that went out, say, "Got me there, take me away"? No, he did the exact thing that is really the core of the fundamental misunderstanding people have about Trump. A lot of people are like, he's evil, he's doing all these things, and he's a realist. I mean, that's when you say that, you run the risk of people saying, oh, Trump, he knows this is ridiculous, he's never gonna go through with it. That's not Trump. He knows it's ridiculous, and he hopes we go through with it. So do you think that if Trump, he's Mr. Dominant Strategy. He just goes and says, listen, what should I do? Support the norm, adhere to the perception and the reverence with which previous presidents have treated the peaceful transfer of power and the process of basically not having people throw democracy down the toilet. Everyone else has done that, but Trump is like, yeah, I still want to be president. That's the goal. I always want to be in charge and the most popular talked about person in the world. That's the goal. And so, yes, if he can't do it, he won't do it. But there is a fundamental, concept of a portion of American identity is interpreted by some, which is like, just BS your way until you get it. Why wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. And that's what he does. And that's what I think vibes with a lot of people. That's what they see in him that they like. Because he's just kind of BSing out there. I want to BS until I get it. And he's throwing all these lawsuits at the judicial system. If one goes through, he'll take it. And that's why he's asking all these questions. And in the reports in the New York Times, like, it's not really serious. He's just asking about it. I mean, and that ends up manifesting itself in various ways. That thought process manifests itself in, I'm gonna sue put a bunch of crappy lawsuits out there, but it's also, I'm gonna ask, can we nuke a hurricane? He asks the questions. I mean, he's an idiot, sure. But idiots and fantastic and amazing engineers break everything down into the smallest, simplest little kind of problem they can solve one at a time. Mm-hmm. And that's what he does. Yeah. He just seems like much more of a moron. But then again, he's got the chutzpah and he's trying to shove this through and down your throat, and that's worked for him so far.
Might not keep him in the White House, but I'm sure he'll land on his feet in some way that will continue to annoy us. There's a lot of really dumb right wingers out there that want to make sure that you know they've learned absolutely nothing during this pandemic as the numbers continue to go up. Here is Rand Paul and his advice for people who've already gotten infected with the disease.
We have 11 million people in our country who have already had COVID. We should tell them to celebrate. We should tell them to throw away their masks, go to restaurants, live again, because these people are now immune. But Dr. Fauci doesn't want to admit to any of that. Dr. Fauci's like, oh, woe is me, until the election occurs, and now maybe he'll be changing his attitude. But the bottom line is there's a great deal of optimism that we should have out there, not just with the vaccine, but with the immunity that kids may have pre-existing, and with the immunity that 11 million people got from having the disease.
Yeah, it's great that 11 million people have already had the disease. Jesus, California's passed 1 million cases. But he says they should throw out their masks and go eat because they already had it. And hey, maybe they can't get it again. I mean, he's only a doctor. He doesn't need to be sure before he tells people to go do that.
He's a doctor and he's giving epidemiology advice like an eye doctor. Like, yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's like saying I'm a political scientist, so I get, so here, let me design a spacecraft. Like, no, there are certain fundamentals that might apply, like in terms of applying the scientific method, but I have no confidence that Rand Paul, here's what they want you to think. They want you to think that when it comes to having a political agenda, Dr. Fauci has one and Rand Paul doesn't, even though one's just a doctor and the other is a literal politician.
Yeah. Fauci's so biased, honestly. No, you're 100% right. Yeah, Rand Paul, he's not saying you need to go out there and start spending money for any particular reason or anything like that. And someone pointed out in Twitch, by the way, it's not just that he's saying that if you already had it, go out there because I'm gonna pretend that you're definitely safe, when there have been instances of people getting it for a second time. They might have absolute immunity forever. They might have relative immunity, like a resistance to it forever. They might have a total or relative immunity for a little while. We don't know for sure, but Rand Paul isn't gonna let that stop him from telling you to go out there. But even in that advice, he said, and the relative immunity that kids might have, he's saying they should go out there. He's not even saying in that they're immune, but they might be, and that would be nice. So, you know, go get them some chicken nuggets. Come on, go put them in the restaurant. But anyway, he can pretend like this isn't serious, and certainly he's not gonna treat it in a serious fashion, but it is 100% serious. Yesterday's COVID tracking project report, we had 151,000 cases, the highest ever. And I understand that you might think, wait, but didn't you say that yesterday and the day before that and the day before that? Yeah, that's because all this week we've been breaking records. 67,000 people hospitalized, a death toll above 1,100, or in the words of the greatest political and philosophical, indeed every way, thinkers of our times, like Dave Rubin, can we all admit that the pandemic is over now? Like, at least give us that as you peddle the rest of this nonsense. Yeah, it's not over. It's not over at all.
Sir,
lots of people are dying.
You peddle the rest of this nonsense. The thing about, and I tweeted this, but like knowing Dave Rubin, let me just give you an idea of what it's like to have a conversation with Dave Rubin. There's no there there. There is no this, there, there. He's just this empty, I wanna be popular some way.
Yeah.
In him. And it's like, so tell me about your thoughts. And it's everything is, and there's certain people you get on panels with who realize while they're on the panel that they know less about something than you. So all they do is look into your eyes and start talking and steer based on your reaction to it. And that's every time I had Dave Rubin on a panel with me, he would start talking and say like, well, historically speaking, you can't, and I'd just go like this, and he'd be like, well, sometimes you can. And that's what it was like. And you're just like, I'm waiting for you to make a statement so I can react to it. And that's me just listening. I'm just listening. And I'm proving I'm listening by reacting. But now I feel like I'm talking with my face through you. It's like the weirdest, crappiest ventriloquist act that you've ever seen.
I think you should be complimented by that, because he was just lost in the night sky looking to navigate, and your face was Rudolph's nose for him. It was just, that's all he can see.
I'll tell you anyway. Who else does it beyond a shadow of a doubt. Jimmy Dore, when he's on a panel with Cenk, it's just question time, like 100%. That's where I first noticed it, and then I saw it in Dave Rubin. Like, it's just, listen, when they're by themselves, they go. And then people who aren't in the room with them listen to it and go, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That's what you see in this tweet here. That's him misunderstanding. Like, even people on his side are like, if they were in the room, they'd be like, that is not what we're saying. He just has this sad, dead-eyed expression when he realizes what he just said. Like, that's what happens when Dave Rubin communicates. It's so depressing.
Look, you're 100% right. And we could clearly go on. I questioned whether I should put the tweet in because I knew it would lead us on a tangent. He's awful. It's for money. It's complete grift. There's no one who's ever grifted as hard as he is grifting. So congratulations to him. But anyway, Rand Paul is a senator. He is supposed to be at least pretending to take this seriously, especially in the absence of any leadership by the White House. They're just done. They're done. All of them. Trump by not caring, Mike Pence by being willing to go on a vacation during all this, Rand Paul with his throw out your masks. If you were wondering what a herd immunity strategy would look like, this is what it is. Just do whatever and we'll see what happens. And as the numbers go up, we're not gonna acknowledge it. That's what this is. This is the herd mentality at play. So frustrating. It's so frustrating. And they're just pretending 151,000 people got it in one day. Not have it. Like, millions of people have it right now and are struggling with it. 151,000 in one day. And we're just hoping and praying that that is the highest number. Every day we see the number and we go, dear God, that's insane. And the next step is, please God, let tomorrow not be worse. That's what we're in right now. Or if you're being paid by right-wing billionaires, it's over, I guess. It's nonsense, really. Here's some news that's gonna shock you. On the first Caribbean cruise ship in months, people got COVID. At least 5 people who were aboard it tested positive for COVID-19 because we're in a pandemic and it's a cruise ship. Most people don't know this, but it's something baked into the design of a cruise ship. If you put a cruise ship to sea with literally no people on it, it will spontaneously develop herpes. Disease just festers on cruise ships. And they went on a cruise. This is how we started. I'm pretty sure that the person who ate that bat or whatever was on a cruise ship in the Caribbean. And I hope that they're fine. I hope that everybody ends up okay. We'll have a little bit. Look, they do look fun. I will admit it. But as I was saying in our Slack, at some point, you just want to be seasick so bad that the threat of dying from COVID isn't enough to scare you off. You just desperately have to eat bad shrimp and be seasick. So
the idea of a cruise ship is it's for idiots. Like, that's what it is. A cruise ship is like, hey, do you want shrimp? You open, yes, maw. They throw it into your maw. And then it's like, hey, do you want drinks? Yep, maw. Throw it into your maw. They're like, hey, do you want us to put you in a bus and take you around to, like, you know, King Midas's castle? Yeah. And then you just, they're like, okay, come here. It's so that you don't have to plan anything. And it's just a bunch of people named Kippy saying, hey, do you want to do this right now? And you go, yeah, sure. And here's the thing, like, the people who don't do it, like, you hear all the time, all you have to do is be back at the ship by 6. And every cruise, there's like 20 people who are like, I don't even know what time it was.
All of what you just said is true. All of that said, I think it sounds really cool. I want to do it. I want to go. I'm not going to because it's a pandemic, people, but it sounds great. I want to go. I want to go on one of the big ones where, like, they put a Ferris wheel on it for some reason. Like, it doesn't have to have a Ferris wheel. You're going to places that have Ferris wheels. But I want that.
I just said that cruises are for idiots. Okay. I love cruises with all my heart for all the reasons I just outlined. I love just going shrimp.
I have a maw and I want things in it. That's me. That's my Twitter bio. And it cannot be misinterpreted. Your wife, by the way, left a comment on Twitch that says limbo contest though. Yes, limbo is very important, but it might be limbo and a disease. So let me give you a little bit more information.
This is the best because it's all speedos where you're sitting in a banana chair, like, sitting there, like, having a good time, and next to you, the entire family stands up, and it's just their penises like this. It's just that's the direction penises go in Speedos. And it's like, and you're sitting there in your banana chair, look like as they stand up, it's just like their bananas right there.
Okay, well, that's disgusting. I want to give you a little bit of information. This was on the Sea Dream One. And if you're listening to the podcast, it's SEA. The C does not stand for the sea that he was just talking about or COVID. The Sea Dream One is the first vessel to begin sailing in the Caribbean since March. And what do you know? It only took the first for this obvious horrible idea to fail. The captain announced that the passenger aboard Sea Dream One tested positive on a preliminary basis. They would not define what that means. I assume it means they have COVID, but five people apparently did. Every passenger on board had to test negative for the virus several days prior to boarding, and again on the day of boarding, but that wasn't enough because again, it's a pandemic. Another round of testing was conducted after this turned out. There were 53 passengers, 66 crew members. So hopefully it was just constrained to those five people, but again, it's on a cruise ship, which is basically just a lightly bobbing petri dish.
I love it. They're so good.
On a cruise ship, man.
You get a badge that's like, fill this drink up. This says I have a drink pack. Fill it up.
Sounds good.
And then everyone just like eat. They don't get the drink package. They get like a 5-liter bottle of like Poland Springs. Pour it out. Fill it up with vodka. Like, oh, this is just water. And everyone in like the baggage check when you come in is like, sure, it's just water. I don't actually care.
I have nothing to do with this. Don't care at all. Oh, yeah.
So good. I love cruises, man. It's planning a trip without planning a trip.
Which I mean, that's why I'm friends with your wife. Just plan trips for me, please. I can't do it. I don't want to do it. But anyway,
go traveling with John when he's hurt his ankle recently on a largely walking trip of Amsterdam.
We had fun.
We did have fun.
The day before the election, I did a live video about Alex Jones, which isn't normally how I like to spend my morning, but I had to because he had had on the leader of the domestic terrorist group, the Oath Keepers. And they were saying that in theory, they're going to have people deployed around the country to do stuff if they need to. If there's problems at the polls and stuff like that, they've got people with guns that are going to take care of it. They are desperate to begin massacring people. And it turns out that Donald Trump having lost is only making them more eager for the fight. So Alex Jones, who is continuing to have on a guy who is promising to commit terror attacks, and somehow that's okay. You can just do that. It's not a problem. The FBI doesn't seem to care. He had him on again. And here is what the leader of the Oath Keepers said.
I just see it happening and we're there to support it. So what we're doing is we have men already stationed outside DC as a nuclear option. In case they attempt to remove the president illegally, we will step in and stop it. And we're going to be there to also help secure the coming rally this Saturday and your caravan coming in. So I've got good men on the ground already. We've been did a leaders recon there last week, and we're sorting out what we're going to be staging, and we'll be there. We'll be inside DC. We'll also be on the outside of DC armed, prepared to go in if the president calls.
Stuart, can you not feel history happening right now? I mean, it's happening right now.
It is. And we all need to realize that we're Americans. We're born in this country at this time for this purpose. We need to let go of the fear, you know?
Okay. So just really fast, let's notice that as they're talking about we're Americans, we're born in this country, need to let go of fear. Alex Jones is standing in front of a gigantic Statue of Liberty. Not a big fan of immigrants. Anyway, okay. So they've got people stationed, good men. Fact check, they're not good men. Arguably not men, but they're certainly not good. And they're ready if this election is stolen from Donald Trump, which they define as him losing, they're ready to go in there. And he's previously, in his other appearances on the show, he's talked about how Democratic leaders are already terrorists because they're working with the enemy. So they're ready to take out the command and control of the enemy. So they're going to assassinate Democratic leadership. He has been openly saying this for literally weeks now, and he is continuing to. That's your Oath Keepers.
I just thought about this. He's got one eye, but two glasses. Feel like you really missed a chance for a monocle here. So few people get to use monocles, but you don't.
Thank you,
Brad. Feel like it's too many accessories. Like if you spent, you know, I feel like they should get a. I wonder if those are both prescription. I'm just saying, get LASIK, man.
Okay. Because
you have the badass eye patch thing. I feel like you're missing a chance to be a badass It reminds me of Zach Galifianakis' character, who's the pretentious illiterate, who's like, it's like I told you, I can't read. Like,
okay, that's good. Anyway, we have a group of white supremacists who are very well armed, who are saying that in theory, they're ready to protect the caravan, which I don't think anyone in DC has any interest in interacting with. And by the way, I should, if you don't know what they're talking about here, they're gonna have this caravan of InfoWars supporters. We're gonna hold an event on November 14th, so that's coming up this weekend. The InfoWars contingent is one of several far right groups that say that they'll have a rally in the city to support Trump. They've been doing recon in DC. Again, remember, this isn't an actual war, this is a cosplay war. So I assume that means they drove around DC. It's just DC, like, what are you doing recon on? But honestly, let's engage seriously with that thought. What would they be doing recon on? Obviously, they're not just like seeing the sites, they're not going to visit the Washington Memorial. So they are looking for things that might be a problem for them when they try to massacre people. And so to the police of DC, the Secret Service, anyone who's protecting the president, understand that they theoretically think that you might be part of a plot to take the presidency away from Donald Trump. So sure, he'd love to kill civilians and he'd love to kill Democrats, but if you get in the way, you're the people that he's talking about killing there. And again, they can just do this day after day. He is saying he's going to murder these people and that he has people on the ground ready to go to murder these people. And people are asking in the chat, are they gonna get in trouble? No, apparently they're not. Apparently, you can just do this. You can just say, I'm gonna kill this person and this person, we're gonna wipe out these people, and it's totally fine. You can just do that.
And General Mark Milley came out and said, listen, everyone, I hate that I have to like read the tea leaves on what he's implying here, but that's how it used to be. And I hopefully I can read it the way I used to read tea leaves. But he goes, we in the military do not swear an oath to a king or country or a president. We swear an oath to the Constitution. So we're gonna uphold that. And everyone thinks that that's a signal that, listen, no matter what happens, if we recognize what the result of the election is, Trump's gonna be on his way out and we're gonna respect the constitutional process that ushers him out. And good luck to all these schmucks out there following One-Eyed Willie who are gonna go in and try to fight against the military. Not to mention like the 90% of people in DC who voted for Biden.
But I think it was 95%
who voted for Biden in our 51st
state. So look, here, what I'm worried about is them, a couple of their unhinged, out of their mind followers killing some civilians, trying to assassinate a politician. That's what I'm worried about. In theory though, what he should be worried about is that if they ever do any of this, literally every single one of them is going to be killed. I'm sure you think you're really badass with your gun or whatever. They're gonna wipe you out so easily, you goddamn moron. Cosplay's fun. Reality, not so much. I might wear a sword and pretend to be an elf. I'm not actually gonna try to fight the Balrog. That wouldn't go well for me. And that's what they seem. They seem desperate to be murdered by the FBI, the Secret Service, the National Guard, and all of that. But anyway, and also, you know what? This is one of the reasons why I'm so done with Joe Rogan. I know that he's really popular or whatever. He keeps having Alex Jones on. Alex Jones's platform is where he brings on people who are about to commit massacres and terror attacks and just talks about how it's so historic. Don't you love being part of history? And he's done that for weeks now. And then Joe Rogan will have him back on, they'll have a fun chat, maybe they'll smoke weed or something. That's cool. This weekend, they're gonna get more desperate because Donald Trump is not going to be president. And a lot of these people are not mentally or emotionally prepared for that to happen.
So the question is, what happens, John? What happens? So here are your options. One, Trump denies that he loses forever and his sons take over the Republican Party. And they try to use that to keep a united Republican far right party in a coalition intact. Two, the option is Trump loses. People look around and go like, oh my God, he actually did lose. And Trump's minions kind of try to find someone else to hang on to, but there is no Mance Rayder style uniter of the weirdos like Trump, and they all just kind of disappear into the ether. What do you think happens?
I don't think that the vast majority will ever accept that Trump actually lost. And I know that, really fast, I know that some people will say that, but that's how it always is. People never accepted the other, that they actually lost fair and square. That's not true. That's not true. And you know, we get attacked sometimes for acknowledging it, like acknowledging when people we support in primaries don't win. People don't like that. They want to keep living the dream. But even like they'll say, well, 2016, I mean, Hillary Clinton, she still whines all the time. Yeah, she does. She's still really mad about it. And she conceded the next day. And I know some people think that we went hysterical and lost our mind about the 2016 election. When did anyone ever say Trump didn't win? We didn't. We might say it's dumb that the Electoral College exists. We might say we're identifying things that influence people's votes. But nobody tried to claim that the election was stolen in terms of votes being crossed out or deleted, or Dominion did this, or they found there was a Biden-Harris van. That nobody said any of that stuff. We said it's awful, it's horrendous that he's president. We didn't say he's not president, he didn't win. We can say it's fundamentally anti-democratic to have the popular vote winner not win. That is not the same thing as what they're doing. And I do not think they will ever accept it. I don't think Donald Trump will ever tweet, you know, I tried my best, but Biden beat me. That's just not going to happen. And that means that minimum 50 million people or so will literally never accept that Joe Biden legitimately won this and that it wasn't even close.
Yeah, I get it. And I think there is definitely a play to be made by the progressive side of the aisle to say, listen, establishment Democrats who thought that, you know, who used the word Russia to be equivalent with an excuse for not appropriately messaging to people on Facebook, like, and fix it. Stop disenfranchising stop blacklisting, you know, primarily Facebook oriented groups that can launch successful marketing campaigns online, and do that. And then you go back to the people in Trump's circle who earnestly just want a $15 an hour minimum wage, or the people who voted for Trump, not for any race reasons. I can never reach out to them. I'm never gonna get that. But I'm sure there are people out there who are like, listen, I just want food on the table. I hate everyone that's in the establishment, and just say, hey, I'm with you. Here's, I'm just gonna send you just. What if we advocated so you have healthcare and we stopped giving huge handouts to major corporations and start giving that to which you are in, you know, entitled as a human being to you?
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody, it's been a long week and now it's time to take out the trash. Oh my God, the chat has blown up with those garbage people emojis. So my garbage is going to be this robot doing a bad job of trying to pass for a human. Mark Zuckerberg, you wanna know what the human species is? We chose that this guy should be one of the most powerful people in history. We did that. But why? Why? Not just for all the normal reasons, and certainly on any given week, there's a good case for him to be in there. No, it has to do with Steve Bannon. And when, just a couple of weeks ago, Steve Bannon on his podcast said this.
And that's the second term. Second term kicks off with firing Ray, firing Fauci. Now, I actually want to go a step farther, but I realize the president is a kind-hearted man and a good man. I'd actually like to go back to the old times of Tudor England. I'd put the heads on pikes, right? I put them at the two corners of the White House as a warning to federal bureaucrats. You either get with the program or you're gone. Time to stop playing games, blow it all out.
Okay, Steve Bannon, who is not just a regular right-wing blowhard of the YouTube variety or the Fox News or the ONN or whatever. He was very closely tied to Trump, still pops up on the radar, very influential Republican, is saying that the head of the FBI and Dr. Fauci, for some reason, should be executed and beheaded. That is what he is advising the president to do. And that wasn't enough for him to get in trouble. with Facebook. Zuckerberg, who had an all-hands meeting recently, told Facebook staffers that Steve Bannon had not violated enough of the company's policies to justify his suspension from the platform, saying, quote, "We have specific rules around how many times you need to violate certain policies before we will deactivate your account completely. While the offenses here, I think, came close to crossing that line, they clearly did not cross the line." So it's not enough to call for public officials to be murdered and beheaded. You gotta do it a couple more times. How many times? I don't know. Let's find out. Let's see as it keeps happening. What?
This is the logic at play here. Just from a computer programmer standpoint, because that's what he is. He's so stupid. His logic, if applied to the American criminal system, would be you need to break laws enough times for us to put you in jail. Mm-hmm. Not severe crimes. That's what we all use. And there are some ways where it's like recidivism, it affects recidivism rate affects how much we put you away for. There is a way that we factor that in, but man, it's not how many times. There are plenty of ways you can violate terms of service or laws where we look around and say, okay, that's enough. That one was a big enough transgression. So whether his logic applies accurately to Biden, to Bannon or not, I'm just saying, like, when this is what I get frustrated with from major tech companies is when the people that, as you say, we trust to be the big, huge influencers in the world, his logic says that the only factor is frequency of violation of terms of service and does not take into account severity of violation. And that's just so damn stupid.
Yeah, well, and also probably not real. I agree with you, severity matters. I think we could have the meth principal, Steve Bannon calling for beheadings, not even once. I think we can all agree on that. But that's not what this is. Any random person who had done that would have had their account suspended. They do take into account severity, but we also have to take into account how severely attached they are to the right and how protective they are of the right's interests. And this is not the first bit of information about this. I mean, we did stories over the past few months about the fact that whistleblowers have shown that the constant lying and misinformation that would normally get you flagged, when it comes to people like Diamond and Silk, the top level management of Facebook would step in and say, no, we're not going to give them a strike. We're going to let it pass because of who they are, because of what they believe, and the fact that they'll complain and say that they're being mean to the right if they were to ban them. And it is possible to Twitter banned Bannon as a result of exactly the video that we just showed you there, but not Facebook, because Facebook has Mark Zuckerberg. And whether it's because of like complete weakness and lack of humanity, or indeed because he explicitly aligns himself, even in his own mind, with the right, they are always going to go easier on them.
That's so, yeah, I get it. And it's, if I were to offer advice to Facebook, is like, you're becoming the Yahoo. Like Yahoo was, Google was the cool one, Facebook was the cool one, Yahoo was the one that like catered to grandparents and used that, you know, and their executives were always just a little out of touch and weird about stuff. And you were under, you were like, I just don't think that they're making the right decisions right now. And Facebook is, to me, becoming the Yahoo. They're catering to a certain population that makes them feel like they're out of touch. And what's frustrating with that is I do believe that that's how Facebook is right now, but the Democratic establishment isn't acknowledging that and isn't acting accordingly. If you said like, yo, you want the same people who use Yahoo Mail, they'd be like, yes, that is our bread and butter. So why aren't you going after them there? Do it. That's who's using it. I saw there's like a shower thought that was trending on Reddit today that was like, older people misuse the internet, the idea of parental control takes on a completely different meaning. And that's what I think is happening.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, and my final point is, look, he's not a garbage person just because of this. That is bad enough. It is that, as we were just talking about, we're in a time when there are a lot of crazy, violent people We have leadership, we have conspiracy theories that have laid the groundwork for the utter demonization and dehumanization of more and more Americans, and Republican leaders that are at least willing to give a wink and a nudge to these theories. We have people who are on the precipice and have already committed acts of terror and acts that have been foiled, thankfully, at the last minute. And Facebook is telling us, no, if you make these sorts of threats, be powerful. If you're powerful, it'll be okay. We're not gonna put you in any sort of trouble as a result of that. And by the way, someone in the Twitch chat, Global Astro, says, proof of the point, David Pakman apparently got demonetized for discussing that Bannon clip, but Bannon didn't get banned. I didn't know that, but if that is true, that is an amazing demonstration of how much they cater the right wing.
We had to pull the clip itself out of our, you know, TY, the Young Turks channel video before we posted it. Because between when we shot it and when we uploaded it, it got banned. And they use,
wow.
And so, and there's a lot of like things that are maybe practical, but definitely don't hold logically. Like they do content ID software. So if you use, even though legally your claim would hold up to be able to use certain content, frequently these channels, you know, they basically say you're using it at all. You're using a clip at all. You are just as bad as the person who made the clip. When obviously the news uses clips all the time to discuss things in the zeitgeist. But yeah, to avoid it, because we know how clunky their systems are, we just pulled it out and put up a slate saying like this got banned by YouTube. Yeah. Take our word for it. He said to decapitate two people.
Exactly.
And it's sad too, because I just want to say like his set, he has like a Where's Hunter thing where we saw Hunter, we know where he is. And then if you look over Bannon's shoulder on his TV screen, he doesn't even have like a monitor with his logo or anything on it. It's like up next, Antebellum Man is there. And the Good Doctor is up next. Hit okay to discover more. Do you want to watch
that
the
just
good
a TV?
He was just watching TV. This is your show, well, man.
I mean, that's supposed to appeal to, I guess, like Donald Trump.
What if over your shoulder was like, up next, House for the 700th time, John, would you like to know more?
No, it's just like, it's like paused on the DVD menu of Signs.
Everyone
like it has nothing to do with anything.
Everyone's just watching for the DVD logo to hit the corner the whole time.
Oh, I gotta do that. No, your wife would lose it.
My garbage person is a man named Dean Flamp von Houten III. We have a photo of him. This is Flamp von Houten III. He is the dean of the Electoral College, and he is a garbage person. He's been the dean for 200 something years, and he hasn't changed the curriculum whatsoever. There is no need for Dean Flamp von Houten to still be in charge of the Electoral College, because the Electoral College is stupid. Let me take you through the Electoral College's math curriculum. Here is two totals, 77,509,510. So a spread of 5 million votes is still a toss up, even though, and we counted all the votes, we have this many votes. The number of outstanding votes to be counted is less than 5 million, but still somehow the math doesn't fully check out yet. We're not quite certain. John Rotten, the way that they do, just in terms of the civics that you need to understand at the Electoral College to graduate, John Roberts of Fox News said, the anger out there in these red states is so deep, so palpable that GOP legislators may have a difficult time seating Biden electors. Here's something stupid. If your state voted for Biden, you're not a red state anymore. The only reason you could be a red state is because you've been gerrymandered so hard due to a bunch of other legacy things that are tangentially related to the Electoral College, if not specifically, then thematically, to say the least, that doesn't make sense either. Jonathan Larson wrote about like some processes in place that if you really want to read a scary ass thing in the TYT Investigates, here's an excerpt. There's nothing stopping the Republican controlled state legislatures from sending their own slates of electors. There's no law saying they can do that, but there's no law saying they can't basically disregard the results of a vote. Like, this is the stuff that's so terrifying. It's like when you really look at the Second Amendment, it's for people like the Oath Keepers. It's not for people who just want a gun around the house to defend against criminals who break in. Like, that's the scary part, where like every person in their right mind would say, you know what? It was a long time ago when they designed the Constitution, and there were a lot of practicalities that involved horses and buggies and lack of television and even radio that made it difficult to really communicate a lot of stuff. All of that has been remedied, yet the Electoral College and Dean Flamp Van Houten III still hasn't really come around yet. No, we're gonna keep it the same way. Guys, he's dead. He died a long time ago. They just put glasses on him and updated his wardrobe. And rather than have an easel that he is at to, you know, like one of those student desks that you used to have a drafting board, they just got a new bamboo-based tablet to set it up against. It doesn't make sense. And even people like Lindsey Graham and those in Trump's orbit who are advocating for basically doing an end run around what we've at least come to collectively interpret as the norms for governing how you apply the principles of the Electoral College, they, in saying they want to disregard who the elector should be and put in other ones, means they want to abolish the Electoral College too. And they're looking for things that are loopholes. No one likes it. No one likes it. John, you recently tweeted like the popular vote isn't enough, the electoral vote isn't enough. What is the other framework that we're going to run to try to keep some kind of balance and power that is remotely reflective of the general voting population of America? And the answer, I know you're being rhetorical, but the answer is something even harder to secure, which is two senators from the state of Georgia. That's where we're at. And that's how they've successfully been able to guide it. And we need to take some time to look in the mirror, get those Senate seats, which I think is gonna be real, real rough. It's gonna be Lindsey Graham, Jamie Harrison rough. And then we need to reevaluate, and we need to find a way to at least make, if not delete the Electoral College, if not, if the Senate is still a nightmare, we need to find a way to keep it, to keep the way that our government works at least moderately reflective of what most people in that country want.
Which clearly now it does not. A great garbage person makes all the sense in the world. To those, you know, right wingers who are tweeting, oh, let's see if they still want to get rid of the Electoral College now, I have a simple answer. Yeah, no, let's get rid of it. They won't, I'm sure. Nothing's gonna happen, but they definitely should still get rid of it. Us winning in the Electoral College doesn't mean it's not stupid still. It is. I totally agree with you there. By the way, that thing about the Republican legislatures being scared of these people so that they'll flip over the votes. Think about that. That they are more scared of right wingers who are angry that Trump lost than they are of what the majority who voted blue will feel like when their votes are nullified. Isn't that amazing? Dude. But that's how things function here.
Oh, all the time. I remember when I first started working on your show, there was the main ranked choice voting issue where they it's not like like frequently you elect your representatives and you're like, come on, representatives, do that thing I want. And it's like, well, I'm trying to interpret what you want. And then you have a referendum where it's like, no, this is exactly what I want, ranked choice voting. And then the legislature was like, no, let me tell you what's good for you. Same thing happened in Florida with referendum on people who have repaid their debt to society to vote again. And the legislature's like, it's fine, I'm just gonna say no to you. How many times does it take? We just want something that's moderately representative of what we want.
Exactly. Flamp Van Houten is yours, Mark Zuckerberg is mine, but what does the Dragon Squad think? Well, they chose a garbage person this week by going to the community tab at the YouTube channel and voting. And I'm gonna go from fifth place up to first this week. We have fifth place, Matt Gaetz got 2% of the vote for being a creepy tool, so that's fun. In fourth, we have GSA Administrator Emily Murphy for holding up the transition. Fun part about that is that I now know who the administrator of the GSA is. That got 11% of the vote. Bill Barr is at 13% in third for turning the DOJ into Trump's personal law firm in terms of launching that investigation of voter fraud that he knows damn well didn't happen. In second place, GOP members of Congress for refusing to accept Biden's win. They got 27% of the vote. But we're giving the garbage person of the week for the TDR community and Dragon Squad to Mike Pompeo, who got 46% of the vote for his second Trump administration comments. Although really that's kind of like the second one. It's Republicans who are going along with it. And honestly, many of them are going to experience something that Trump defenders inevitably experience. It is defending the president until finally he throws you under the bus by changing his position on something without letting you know first. Trump will concede, he'll let them go all out saying that the election should be nullified and all that, and then he'll just concede and they'll look like idiots because they are for following a guy like this. So thank you to everybody who voted and participating in that. This is democracy, okay? I don't care what Flint Van Houten III says about it. Anyway, Brett, thank you as always. Great to have you here. Can't wait to see what a happy half hour and the common room are gonna be like coming up later today.
Fantastic, thank you everybody.
For many people who like me put the fight against the climate crisis at the top of their politics, that was one of the biggest reasons to choose Joe Biden over Donald Trump, was that Joe Biden seemed to care more about this issue and seemed like he might be able to be pushed to do even better. And if that pushing is going to happen with him now being the president-elect, one organization that's going to be at the forefront of that is going to be the Sunrise Movement. And so I'm very excited to be joined by a spokesperson for the Sunrise Movement, JP Mejia. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks so much for having me on. I'm happy to be here.
We're thrilled to have you here. And I'm very excited to see what the Sunrise Movement is going to do to try to get him to do what's right on the climate. And you guys haven't waited. You know, right out of the gate with him winning, you've been trying to pressure him. So tell me a little bit about the strategy. We're still a couple months out from inauguration. What's the plan to push the Biden administration?
Great question. I'm happy to be here answering them. So Joe Biden and electing Joe Biden was not the end goal, right? There's still so much to do, and we've got a plan for that. We've always had a plan, and that's what we're going through right now. Biden was elected by a historic mandate for action on climate, COVID, systemic racism, the economy. And to fulfill that promise that Biden and Harris ran on to build back better, they're gonna need a team who represents the ambition of their vision, not the folks who got us in this mess. So for those reasons, Sunrise has come out this week saying, listen, you gotta have these picks in your cabinet, folks who are ambitious leaders, who are staunch movement allies to lead us to the sort of world we need to be at, and also the establishment of the Office of Climate Mobilization that will foresee this national project towards a Green New Deal throughout all of our sectors and agencies in government.
Yeah, so I know I saw some of the suggestions for different cabinet posts. I don't actually recall if I saw one specifically to lead the EPA. I know that would only be a part of it, but is there a suggestion that Sunrise is making specifically for head of the EPA?
Yeah, so in terms of the cabinet, we've made our picks very purposeful to be in line with our movement and really address the scope of what the Green New Deal is. So we focused on everything from Treasury to Secretary of State to Labor. And for EPA Administrator, we've chosen Dr. Mustafa Santiago Ali. And Mustafa Ali, he is a visionary environmental justice champion. He's been working on social justice issues like I have at the age of 16. And he joined the EPA as a student and has been one of the US's most respected voices on climate and environmental justice issues. And that's definitely what we're gonna need to recoup from these past 4 years.
Yeah, and look, from top to bottom, the picks are awesome. I mean, Pramila Jayapal being there to push for Medicare for All would be great. Rashida Tlaib would be absolutely awesome. I personally can't imagine they're gonna choose her just because of how awesome it would be, but great picks. And the suggestions that were made, they were widely, like New York Times had coverage of your picks. So this is, it's being sent out there to Joe Biden. So far, has there been any response from his administration, any acknowledgement of the suggestions?
So far, I can't say we've heard anything back besides those who are actually our picks, which I think would be, quite ready to meet the moment, which is why we made the decisions to pick them. However, regardless of how the Biden administration responds to us, we know that we're going to continue building up pressure to actualize the vision of our movement, because that's what we elected him for.
Yeah, so those are the picks. In terms of, everybody now is waiting to see what that first day of a Joe Biden presidency is gonna be like. What is he gonna prioritize? And obviously, we don't yet know what the Senate is going to look like, so it's hard to say exactly how legislation is going to shake out. But there's a lot he can do in various areas, including the climate, just through executive orders. He could do it on day one. Are there any particularly high profile things in any of these areas, including climate, that Sunrise would like to see him prioritize right out the gate?
Yeah, so climate is a culmination of lots of things that we've done wrong, right? And we know that we don't want any personnel on his cabinet tied to any fossil fuel or corporate interests. But beyond that, when we talk about the Senate and the fact that it's pretty vulnerable right now with what's going on in Georgia and the fact that it can swing either way, let's say Republicans do take hold of the Senate. What is going to happen next? Well, we know that Joe Biden was elected on this progressive mandate with, in fact, his climate plan being more popular than Joe Biden himself, which is kind of funny. And our key demands for executive action, which he should use every tool in his toolbox for, are the stopping of drilling on public lands and waters. We want to end fossil fuel subsidies, block the construction of pipelines, and finally create that progressive cabinet on climate and that Office of Climate Mobilization, using the Defense Production Act to mobilize the full resources of the federal government to tackle this crisis at its scope.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, his climate platform shifted during the primary, and after he was chosen, there were those working groups he set up, which Varshini Prakash, the Sunrise Movement, was involved in, and some good stuff came out of that. So there are some good signs. What would you say you or Sunrise are sort of watching for that would be a bad sign, that in theory would give you an indication that perhaps he was not as committed to doing something about climate as he implied that he was during the primary?
Guilt by association is very real here, and we know that we are not going to leave this mess with the folks who created it. That's why we're putting most of our pressure right now on making sure that the team who surrounds Biden's administration and its leadership is progressive and forward thinking and is representative of the United States in both class and race. And we want to make sure that Joe Biden has no ties to fossil fuels through his cabinet and so on. So definitely that's something that we're looking out for and are examining red flags.
Yeah. And mostly we've been focusing on Biden because, of course, thankfully very soon he will be president. We still have a little bit more time with Donald Trump. And I'm just curious, in the area of climate environment, in theory, almost anything that he did other than the emissions that are already out there and baked into our atmosphere could be reversed. His, his methane emissions changes and things like that, the CAF standards. Is there anything in particular that you, as someone who cares about this topic, look forward to seeing thrown into the waste bin of history? Any lingering effect of the Trump administration?
Oh my God. I mean, how long does this show go on for?
As long as you want.
There's lots that we really have to recover from Trump administration standards on the environment. I mean, we know that all of these rollbacks have predominantly affected Black and Brown communities during a time in which they are already crying for help. We've given a whole new meaning to sort of the phrase "I can't breathe" at this point. And we know that Trump is sort of combining the effects of climate change and his love for profit in this brutal way. We know that he has used the effects of climate change, whether it be through natural disasters or droughts, for example, to rationalize some pretty horrible actions. For example, in 2018, he reallocated FEMA funds over to ICE. It's just this brutal sort of ideology that's rampant right now throughout the federal government, combining with climate denialism, that is really on the brink, or even full on fascism, that we're really going to have to stray away from.
I agree. And it's good to see that for the most part going away, but we're going to have to be vigilant to make sure that the things that takes its place is as good as possible. And I'm glad that organizations like the Sunrise Movement will be doing that. JP Mejia, I appreciate you taking the time out to join us.
Thanks so much. It was great to be on.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.